In this episode of Middle East Files, ISIL and regional support, a look at the rapid expansion of the ISIL from Syria to Iraq. Where does the group get its financial and military support? Is the pseudo-caliphate interested in the oil fields in the Middle East? An Islamic caliphate or a dirty intelligence trick? In this edition of Middle East Files.
Hello, welcome to this edition of Middle East Files. I'm your host, Lamis Karut. The Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, Ibrahim Awad, announced himself the rebirth of the Islamic Caliphate and appointed himself the Khalifa. This move was sent unrecognized by nations worldwide as it defied Islamic history and the idea of what a caliphate should be. The ideal of a caliphate sees the world as one borderless nation ruled by Islam. Justice and good would not be bound by geography. This is on paper. In reality, this ideal has never been accomplished. Instead, history has seen many Islamic nations rise and fall based on their interpretations of governance under Islam. As Muslims around the world celebrated the arrival of the holy month of Ramadan this year, ISIL, also known as Daesh, declared the creation of an Islamic caliphate. The declaration was done independently, and no nation recognized the announced state. The leader of the Takfiri group, Ibrahim Awad, who also goes by the name Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, declared himself the caliph. What chances of success does the ISIL caliphate have? Let's look at their rhetoric.
Either you are with us, or you are with the terrorists.
Either you are with us, or you are with the terrorists. These were the words uttered by U.S. President George W. Bush as he announced his 9/11 revenge plans on September 20, 2001. The plans included an invasion of Afghanistan followed by the invasion of Iraq. Today, this extremist doctrine is repeated in ISIL's words and actions. The Takfiri group's ideology does not allow for a difference of opinion. Anyone who disagrees with them faces death. In the areas controlled by Daesh, the most extreme practices have become common. Minorities like Christians living in ISIL-controlled areas have faced taxes and expulsion. Other minorities, such as the Yazidis, have been less fortunate. Those seen by Muslim rejectionists face death by the sword. Public decapitations have been carried out in city squares. Under Daesh, there is zero room for disagreement. The rapid expansion in Syria and Iraq spread fear into neighboring areas. However, ISIL's methods have also faced rising oppositions in their areas of influence. Tribes in eastern Syria, which had initially pledged allegiance to ISIL, have taken up arms against them. Daesh's so-called caliph defies the history of early Islam. It's an unpopular and suspicious call. This raises a very serious question. Who is hiding behind the Islamic facade the ISIL is trying to portray in its attempt to destroy Iraq and Syria? Joining me to discuss the so-called Daesh is Dr. Nimr Freiha, and he's a political science professor.
Dr. Nimr, let's begin with the question of, do the political allies of the so-called Daesh also take Baghdadi's call seriously?
The ISIS or ISIL allies are not supporting this group in order to see Islamic State with caliphate. Rather, they are supporting them to destroy two states in the Middle East, Iraq and Syria, knowing the structure of the two societies. So it's easy for them to have such militant group penetrating within the society, gaining some supports from some of its individuals, and driving their forces into the cities and villages. I would say it's the most dangerous group coming to our region in its history. I don't want to say since Holako or Genghis Khan. They had more mercy than this group. At least they fought soldiers, but they didn't kill the civilians, while this group is killing the civilians. Mm-hmm. The direct threat, I can portray it in this way. They are dealing with two or three societies. They are pluralistic societies, which are so far Iraq, Syria, and they started to attack Lebanon. Those societies are structured in a very delicate way. And they have many sects, many religions, many subcultures, more than 5-6 languages. So when you bring such a group into such a place, they will segregate the people first, then they would discriminate against certain groups of the people. And this by itself, an act of destruction to the society. So this is the most dangerous element coming to our area through its history, I would say.
Dr. Nimr, do you think this Takfir group is part of a larger project, if you want, formed by Western countries who continue to speak about this so-called new Middle East?
Actually, when we talk about this issue, we cannot take the foreign countries out of the picture, and we cannot say they are innocent. In one way or another, they support them. If we take Al-Qaeda, for example, United States created Al-Qaeda, even though it's fighting it now. And Daesh, in one way or another, it got some support, if not military support, maybe political support from the West. Because the Arab countries or Arab regimes and some other regimes in the area supporting Al-Qaeda, they are the closest friends and allies to the United States of America. It means America knew about the Holy Group, and maybe it served to a certain point of time, it served its strategy in the area, because the West strategy, the Western society strategy, based on the recommendation of Israel, which plays a strong role in their politics, they would like to see the Middle East as small societies fighting each other based on their religious affiliations. And here, Daesh is offering the best example to the West. But at the same time, Daesh is becoming a threat to the West itself.
Muslims around the world have either ridiculed or ignored Baghdadi's call. Crimes committed by ISIL have proved it to be everything but a role model for Muslims to follow. Even Islamic authorities have planned to delegitimize Baghdadi as a religious figure. All these factors combined have left Baghdadi with his own Islamic State, without any Muslims.
Muslims around the world were united in the rejection of the Caliphate Declaration by the Daesh ringleader. As soon as the declaration was made on June 29th, Muslim scholars and leaders ridiculed the notion. Qatar-based Egyptian scholar Yusuf Al-Kardawi said, quote, "A group simply announcing a caliphate is not enough to establish a caliphate," end quote. Al-Azhar University professor of Sharia and law, Sheikh Mahmoud Al-Jabali, told an Egyptian publication that the announcement demonstrates ISIL's disrespect for the centuries-old Islamic legacies. Even the Al-Qaeda-affiliated Al-Nusra Front described their former ally as a, quote, "deviant." A few marginal terrorist groups like Pakistan-based Tehreek al-Khalifa did pledge allegiance to Baghdadi. But in terms of number, the caliphate call was mostly mocked. The grand majority of the world's over 1.6 billion Muslims didn't even dignify ISIL with a response. Elaborating on no Muslim endorsement for the so-called ISIL is Dr. Imad Al-Hout, and he is a Lebanese Member of Parliament representing Jama'a al-Islamiyya. Dr. Imad, I would like to get Jama'a al-Islamiyya's view on the so-called Daesh.
Let me start by saying that every extremism is condemned, especially if it is in the name of religion, because usually religion is here for helping people or human being to lead his life easily and not with every kind of force or etc. The state, it's called the Islamic State, Daesh in Iraq, does not have the rules of a state. So it is a fake state indeed, because every state to be called a state have to have three rules. First, definition of land. And in this case, we do not have a sharp definition of the land of this so-called state. Secondly, definition of resources of existing, economy, social, etc. And the third element, which is the most important, is the acceptance of the population. So it is a fake state because neither of these three elements do not exist. It's not the name of Khalifa which is important. Which is important is the definition of justice, of liberty, of the will of the population to decide. All this kind of element or definition of a state.
You know, the West has this negative image about Islam. Now the so-called Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant came in. Now the West is even more terrified of Islam. What are your comments here? I mean, are they representing Islam in any way whatsoever?
Look, it's obvious that the way of acting of this so-called Islamic State is damaging the image of Islam, not only in the West, but also in our region, because people look at this way of acting as a barbarian acting, which is not the real image of Islam. This is why we have to we have the responsibility to clarify the real image of Islam and to put an end of this way of barbarian acting and not Islamic acting of the fake or so-called Islamic State.
ISIL's main objective has to do with oil interests. The Takfir group has taken over oil fields in Iraq and Syria and has started selling oil for profit. Rare moves were made by Western governments when ISIL committed atrocities in the region. However, when oil interests were threatened in Iraqi Kurdistan, of course an ally of the United States, a different scenario played out.
gaining access to oil for themselves and denying it to their enemies has been part of the ISIL strategy. This is what Business Week magazine said in an article published on June 20th. Since that date, ISIL has consolidated its control over 7 oil fields in Iraq. This is in addition to its control of the oil-rich Raqqa province in Syria. The market value of the oil produced by fields under Daesh control in Iraq exceeds $8 million a day. This oil income helps the Takfiri group sustain its military activities. It also has allowed for the recognition of ISIL as a trade partner by all parties that are interested in the oil. Robert Fisk in The Independent and Steve Cole in New Yorker magazine, among others, link the latest U.S. military intervention in Iraq to oil interests. There was no global mobilization when ISIL terrorists pillaged Damascus and Baghdad oil interests. However, when the oil interests of the Erbil regional government, which is close to Washington, were threatened, American bombs were dropped. The impact of Daesh on the lucrative oil market has raised many questions about the sudden rise of ideological extremist group. Initial funding of the group came mainly from private donors from the Arabian Peninsula, according to Bloomberg Business Week. The rise was facilitated by regimes fighting against the Syrian government. A Washington Post article published on August 12 profiled the town of Reyhanli in Turkey and how it rolled the red carpet for ISIL. Its hospital treated ISIL fighters, and foreign fighters flowed freely through the town into Syria. On Wednesday, August 20th, German Development Minister Gerd Müller hinted in a television interview that Qatar was still funding the group. Today, the Caliphate of Brahim Awad, also known as Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, seems to be all about the oil. Who is the mysterious leader of the so-called Islamic State in Iraq and the Levant? The history of the so-called caliph is filled with unknowns. Part of his active life was spent while detained for years by the U.S. military in the Camp Buka prison in Iraq. U.S. Air Officer James Schuyler Guron told Mother Jones that he believes that Awad was radicalized under U.S. detention. Guron was compound commander in Camp Buka in 2006 and 2007. Shedding more light on the global impact of the so-called Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant is Mr. Mario Abouzeid, and he's a research analyst at the Carnegie Middle East Center. The so-called Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant has ambitions in exporting its ideology outside the Middle East. So then what kind of threat does that pose to countries outside the Middle East, countries such as the United States, countries such as Europe, who as well maybe haven't condemned much the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant?
First of all, the Islamic State itself, by declaring a caliphate, it represents a direct threat not only for the international community, but it represents a direct threat for the Arab world and the Islamic states in the Arab world. Because by declaring a caliphate, that means that it won't stop at critical concrete borders. It extends way beyond natural borders or really known border. It's about a theological sovereignty over all Muslims in the world. And the way the Islamic State is explaining the Sharia is way different than the true core and essence of the Sharia. And this is why it's becoming more and more dangerous, because they are explaining it in a way that leads the society towards more extremism and more violent actions. And this is not what the essence of the Sharia is about.
We've seen them take over multiple oil fields in Iraq and Syria, and they're starting to sell stolen oil. What does this mean then for the region and for the international community?
This is one key issue. It's about the funding of the Islamic State and how they were trying to get more funds to support their cause and to support all this operation they're having. They have an army and they have controlled tremendous territories, and they need to support and to replace the states who were present and their institutions who were present in those territories. This is why they were engaged in the oil sector, and they started to sell the oil they were able, the oil reserves they were able to control. They started selling these resources whether to Turkey or to other players in the region. If it's not about direct funding, it's in an indirect way everyone is contributing to the expansion of the Islamic State by just leaving this organization expand and not directly attack it. They are contributing in a way or another for its expansion, and this is why it is dangerous. And we saw lately the international community and the United Nations Security Council, once they reached critical positions such as the Mosul Dam, which represents a dangerous threat for all Iraq and the region. It's the biggest dam in the Middle East. We saw how the international community and the Security Council just directly declared that we must fight ISIS and we must stop it from more expanding, and we saw how the U.S. directly engaged in airstrikes to stop them from more expanding further toward Kurdistan or controlling more oil resources.
ISIL has spread fear and uncertainty to the region. It even has ambitions in spreading its Tekfiri ideology outside the Middle East, leaving the world with a lot of apprehension and many unanswered questions. Questions such as, what is ISIL's next step? And what is needed to defeat this group? Thanks so much for staying with me on this edition of Middle East Files. I'll see you next time. Goodbye.